got it. All right. On a Thursday, lots and lots of news to get to. Good time to end. Zeke, we fixed the door so he can't hear. We're going to, like, Lake Washington windows and doors are going to come in and fix that crack in there. Let's see if he can.
Dominic!
He can hear me. You can
what
hear
crack?
Me.
No,
you
talking
no,
about a crack?
No, no.
You're cracked.
Yeah, Dominic. I listened back to the show yesterday.
As
I
always did.
I laughed out loud twice at something you said.
Oh.
So that's good.
Oh, that is good.
It makes it worthwhile. By the way, tomorrow I believe the eagle poops, doesn't it, in there, Andrew? Big pile of poop for you tomorrow?
I don't remember.
Why am I like the only guy that knows when we get paid?
You're the only one who obsesses about money, and you've got more of it than all of us put together.
How come Andrew doesn't know? Why aren't you, like, on your last nickel in there? How do you not know?
I just don't. It's not on the front of my mind, John.
The answer is yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Ursula. I'm going to just ask you from now on. All right, here we go.
The
Seattle police officers acted properly when they fatally shot a man on New Year's Eve. They released. Is this the first time we're seeing this video? Because normally they're pretty good about releasing all this video, aren't they?
No. I think this video had been out, and that's why there was a lot of criticism about it, saying, wait a minute, he's on his hands and knees. So what happened is that they stopped him. They got him down on his hands and knees, and he had a gun, and he dropped the gun.
Right.
And so then he said, so why did they shoot him? So there's an investigation to see why. And
they stop him at a gas station. They run his license plate. He's got a suspended license. They go up to the car. He gets out of the car and starts running.
Yes.
So all the cops are chasing after him. I think there's six cops after him. They pin him down. He has a gun, and then the whole idea, was he going to go for it or pull it, and he ends up getting, I think it was a single shot.
Yeah, but the thing is, the gun is away from him, and he's down on his hands and knees,
yeah.
And they say, you know, drop the gun, do not reach for the gun, and we're telling you, do not reach for the gun, or we will shoot you, and he says, just before he gets shot, nope, not reaching, and then he gets shot, so the question is, wait a minute. Would we do that? Did the cops do that wrong or not?
Okay, so this is the clip from the body camera where Yosia Falataka, is that how you say his name correctly? Close enough?
No, I'm going to defer actually
Jacob
to Jacob, who...
Yosia Falatogo.
Okay. He has an interesting backstory. I'll share that with you in a second, but first you might be able to hear him saying, I'm not reaching for it.
We're going to get reaching for it!
They're on top of him, and they're trying to get him down, and there's six guys, and the one guy prior to this piece, they say, stop such and such, or you're going to get shot, right?
Yes.
I asked Dave about that one time. Why do you scream at people, and they use the F word a lot when they're trying? He goes, what we're trying to do is get their attention, because really, we don't want to shoot them. They don't want to get shot. You try to drive through in all of this stress and stuff about, like, you're going to get shot.
Yep.
Right? So they scream that at him. So he has the gun in his waist prior to, do we know how the gun came out of his possession and then onto the ground?
I think he put it down.
So he had it in his hand.
Yeah, he had it. No, they say he pulled it. It was clear he had a gun. They said, get rid of the gun. And I don't know if he dropped the gun or he lost the gun in the struggle, but the gun was sitting there, you know, on the ground. And he said, I'm not reaching for it. No, not reaching for it.
Okay.
And so it raised all sorts of interesting issues or questions.
This is the lawyer for the family says they've had serious issues finding about the internal inquiry exonerating the officers. So they want to know behind the scenes stuff was.
Okay, so this is after the fact.
Yes.
So before we play that, well, let's.
I'm just giving the order of the stuff that's in front of me, Tom.
The Office of Police Accountability. This is the civilian looking at a body that could be critical of the cops if they so found it, said two things. They ruled in favor of the police officer. And they said there are two things. First off, nope, not reaching. They said none of the officers said that they heard that.
Oh, okay.
That it was spoken too softly. But even if it had been heard, it was spoken a half second before the shots.
Yeah.
So even if they had heard it, they wouldn't have been able to find it. So, in effect, our Office of Police Accountability found that the police officers were in the right this time. This is just not a whitewash of the police department. This is a body designed to test case against a police officer,
if
that was indeed the case.
If they passed it with the recognition that even though we said it, there was, during the heat of the moment, there wasn't enough time to process, And if he makes, you can say I'm not reaching for it, but then do you drop one shoulder? Do you make the move like you're heading in that direction or something? We don't know. You can't see from the video, right?
Yes. Yeah. It just says the instant the shot was fired was less than 1 second, exactly 0.64 seconds in a 21-page report that basically exonerates the police officer from any questions about whether he should have pulled the trigger.
Here's the lawyer saying they want to look into how they came to this.
And the family is not happy with this.
The officers knew he was unarmed. He had dropped the gun. He was outnumbered 6-1. And I think officers could have very easily grabbed the gun off the ground and been able to place Mr. Folatogo into custody without any risk to their lives.
Mm-hmm. He says he's particularly worried about the training.
A determination that says that the officer complied with policy and as an extension training is disappointing, and if that is indeed correct, then we need to have serious changes to policy and training so that this doesn't happen to another person.
Okay, and more from the attorney says the man did not deserve to die.
Just because someone, you know, flee the scene does not mean that they get to be killed. And so I think what we're talking about here is whether Mr. Folatogo should be alive today, whether his actions should be addressed through the legal system and not through him being killed on the side of the road.
Okay. He didn't get killed because he fled. He got killed because he had a gun and the cops saw the gun as a threat to their life. And then the way it works out, if you feel as if the guy's going to be able to go for a weapon that could, you know, hurt you, you can shoot him.
I think the attorney would say, just because you run and you have a gun doesn't mean it's your death sentence either.
Right.
But the concern is if it looks like if they feel like you might be going for that gun, even on your hands and knees, then, you know, that's a concern and that's what cost him his life.
Right. But you bear some responsibility for the fact that you run from the police.
Yeah.
You run with a gun.
So
here's what I'd read about the guy. It's pretty interesting.
Okay. We just want one question. One last thing that I wonder about is, and I accept if the OPA rules that, I'm comfortable with that. I feel like that's civilian oversight. I just wonder, was there a chance for a cop, like the attorney says, to have gotten the gun away from him? You know, you often see where drop your gun and then the officer kicks the gun away. I wonder if that was a possibility, because ultimately, I'm sure even the police officers, not even, but the police officer would be happy not to kill the guy, too, gotten away with the gun. But, okay, anyway.
Okay, so I don't have it in front of me.
He's 36 years old.
36 years old, and I read the story about his life. So he kind of had some ups and downs, and then he was moving some drugs up through Alaska, and he got caught on that, a bunch of heroin. The feds want him to get 10 years. The judge looks at his life and says, you know what? He went straight for a while. He had a job. Then he hurt his back. Then his wife lost a job. And then he applied for another job and got that and was sort of trying to turn his life around, right? And then things went sour for him. So then he ended up going back to crime. But the judge said, hey, listen, the feds came in. We want 10 years on him. He says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to parole his sentence and I'm going to let him go. Because I believe, this is not a quote from the judge, but just the idea that you could see where this guy had sort of come back and forth between straightening out his life and then got dealt a bad hand when he hurt his back and then his wife got sick and then she loses a job and then he gets divorced. It was a real mess back and forth. But he tried numerous times to sort of right himself again. And then I would assume, so they catch him with a bunch of pills and some cash. He's got two kids. He's got to pay the bills. And he ran into problems where he wasn't able to get hired again, but he was trying to right himself. And this is what ends up happening.
Yeah, I don't know enough about, you know, why he ran. It was a routine traffic stop. So it wasn't like this was in the commission of a crime, but there might have been a reason for him to run.
Well, he's running maybe because he's got pills, trying to ditch the pills or something, or ditch the cash or something. Yeah, we don't know that part of it. Okay, let's see, moving on. shoot or don't shoot. This is from the News Tribune. The idea is that you would get a chance to see what it's like to be a police officer. I did this like 10, 15 years ago with Evening Magazine. You went into this big room. You have this huge screen in front of you. The people are life-size, and you've got a gun that's the same gun that the police have. Mm-hmm. It shoots a laser sort of thing, and they put you in no-win situations where you are forced to whether or not to draw the gun and shoot or not. And was it a council member that went through it?
Well, so the Gig Harbor County Council or City Council members went through this. It was also, yeah. And also then the writer, the journalist for the News Tribune also went through
right.
it. And they all agree and testify. This it's overwhelming.
Oh, yeah.
It is like so, you know, split decision business. And you could be dead. The person you shoot at could be wrongly killed. Those are the two bad choices. Or you could do the right thing and, you know, protect yourself and not kill. I mean, there are all these various versions, and they all say it is really difficult. This one guy talks, the journalist says, okay, he had two scenarios. First scenario was there's a guy, you know, he's rushing to a situation. The guy has a gun, and he hides behind something, and he comes out and he says, I'm alone, I'm gonna drop my gun. He drops his gun as he comes out. He puts his gun, and the guy says he's so tense the entire time. He's afraid he's gonna pull the trigger. Thank God he didn't. He put the gun down, so he lowers his aim, and then somebody else pops up out from behind him and shoots him. He said, I would have been dead. I shot back at him, but my aim was so because I was caught off guard.
You know what that one is?
No, what's that?
That's the. It's a man and a woman. They're behind a table. It's a no-winner. I had
scenario.
An experience.
Okay.
They, help, help, help. He's raping me. Cop comes in and he goes, okay, I'm going to drop the gun. I'm dropping your gun. So now the cop and the distance between the female and the guy with the gun mm-hmm. is enough space on it. So you're completely focused. You're seeing
sure.
she's the victim.
Yeah, she's the victim.
He's
yes.
the perpetrator.
Yeah.
So you're watching him and he says, I'm putting the gun down. And as soon as he puts it down, the woman pulls out a gun and shoots and kills you. And Tom, the weird thing is that you know it's a video thing. You know there's a guy sitting right behind you on a computer working this thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Your heart is racing.
Well, they say to you after you finish, you might want to sit down for 15, 20 minutes and have some orange juice because your adrenaline level is just through the roof. Here's some of the Tacoma News Tribune. This is talking about shoot or don't shoot simulated training. Oh yeah, I remember that one.
So that's on the screen. You see the he has a hostage, the woman, and then eventually he lets her go. But then he still raises the gun at you, and then you've got to
shoot him.
By the way, in this particular scenario that I was creating, the advisor, I don't know if this if he's a police officer or not, says almost 100% of the time when somebody says I'm alone. They're not alone. That's the part of the information that cops they generally get. Okay, why is he going out of his way to tell me he's alone? Because he's not. And he says that's one thing that he didn't calculate on, like 80% of the time or something.
I asked for the worst situation, no win. The guy goes, I'm going to give you a no win. Okay. And I said, am I going to kill the guy? He said, don't shoot at him on this one. Just see what happens.
Okay.
It's a elderly black man. He must be under like 5'5". He's a little short guy in the big screen, right? And he's stumbling towards you, and he has a bag, a brown paper bag, and he brings the brown paper bag up. And you can tell he's sort of drunk. So you think, is that booze that's in the bag? You know, he's stumbling, and he's slurred. He's speaking to you, and you're screaming, you know, drop the bag or show me your hand. Show me your hand. Mm-hmm. You're screaming at him. He brings the bag up. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to shoot him. So I shoot him. I kill him. He falls to the ground. What's in the bag?
Booze.
A banana.
A banana, yeah.
Then he goes, okay, here it is again. And he does it again. Bag comes up. Bullet shoots out of the bag and kills me.
Right. It's a famous banana gun.
I suggest that anybody that wants to critique a police officer and the job that's done by police officers, do this. Get in there for 15 minutes. I'll let the entire city council of Seattle do a ride along and all the people that are part of this OPA thing. Go in there and get a chance to really experience it. And then they show you where you shot. This one guy, I pulled him over. I'm talking to him and I'm a driver's license, registration, proof of insurance. I'm asking for all that sort of stuff. His girlfriend's in the thing. She goes and pulls a gun out of a purse. I missed him. I missed her with all 9 shots, but I completely obliterated the dashboard. Right. I took the radio out.
Steering wheel will never work again.
I got the rearview mirror. They walk away unscathed.
That's one. In fact, in this guy's second scenario, he says he shot the guy like he should have. He says, but it didn't. Nothing happened. He said, what happened? He says, he didn't pull the trigger hard enough. He pulled the trigger, but he didn't do it hard enough, and so no bullets.
I'm not laughing at the situation.
No, no, no.
It's just something to experience. Yeah. All right. Trump lashes out on Syria as Republicans rebuke him in the House. So they had a vote And it didn't go well for him. I think he only got 60 people on his side.
Two-thirds. You know how loyal Republicans are, especially in the House, to the president. And this two-thirds of the Republicans joined the Democrats in condemning his abandonment of the Kurds.
Here he is talking. Most recent comments about the Kurds.
The Kurds are very well protected. Plus, they know how to fight. And by the way, they're no angels, but they were with us. They are no angels. But they are fighting. We are largely out of that area. We're very well set. We have quite a contingent right nearby of soldiers and of the finest equipment in the world. I don't think we'll have to use it. If Russia wants to get involved with the with Syria, that's really up to them.
Why?
They have a problem. Well, they got in 2015, Obama let him in to take over air cover. So Russia was handling that part.
I know, but now we're abandoning it to them. Now we're giving Iran
8,000 miles away.
It's not our border.
It's not our border.
We shouldn't be losing lives over it.
There you go. Boom, bang.
Oh, my God. Either was Kuwait. Either was Iraq.
Hey, hang on. Hang on. We've learned our lessons from those places.
No, the problem is
I'm doing Rand Paul for you.
Yeah, I know.
Rand Paul. Oh, my God. Rand Paul's like, yes.
I would have so much more respect for Donald Trump if he had a thought-out policy like Rand Paul does. But he doesn't. He's on the fly. He's inept at foreign policy. He reacts emotionally and then tries to cover his tracks. And even the Republicans are not on board saying, what are you doing? It's just.
Did you read the president of Turkey's letter to the Wall Street Journal on Saturday?
Turkey's president.
Yeah.
You're talking about Erdogan.
Erdogan
wrote
a letter, and it got into the Wall Street. It's in the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
It's all about, like, listen, here's why we're doing this. We have more immigrants coming into our country than anyone else, 3.5 million. We can't handle it. You are not doing anything about it. We're stepping in there and trying to control this thing and bring some sort of peace to the area. And then he goes on to just blast away at the Kurds. It's really interesting.
I know. Oh, no, yes. So now, are we taking the side of Turkey?
No.
The problem is, he thinks that Kurds are terrorists.
Yes.
Because in his country, they're not in favor of Erdogan is a terrible dictator, by the way.
Yeah.
But the fact that the Kurds are resisting him might not be a sign that the Kurds are themselves terrorists within that country.
Yeah.
But the Kurds and our American forces, I heard this described by a four-star admiral last night, was that those 2,000 troops were the hinge that kept the door in the Middle East, you know, sort of in wraps. It kept everything in mm-hmm. balance. And with us abandoning that, we're abandoning our allies with the Kurds and turning the Kurds. The Kurds are now aligning themselves with Assad.
With the Syrians.
With Assad, who is the guy who was that everyone was mad at Obama for allowing to stay in office with his red line business. And now we've got Russia backing Assad, and Iran is now rearing its ugly head to say we have it's of no consequence to us.
It is their fight, but I'll say this. What it does send a signal to all of our other allies is that we might not be there for you.
Yeah.
Like Japan.
Well.
Just throwing that in there.
Yeah,
they depend on us, Tom. That was part of the deal.
Distract us.
We'll be right back.
Sure. Share a border with Japan.
No, we don't need
I don't know what you're talking about.
We promised Japan after the war. Don't worry, we're going to take it.
Promises, schmomises. I'm Trump.
Trump schmump. I would like to see him do a schma on some stuff. Don't you think? Has he done a schma? Kiel Mortgage. Hi, Kiel Mortgage. Hey, everybody over there. 1-888-778-KIEL. How's that cake I brought you like 5 months ago? How's that doing? Is that still in the refrigerator? Thanks, Kiel Mortgage. I actually heard my spot for Kiel Mortgage while I was driving yesterday because I got this car that's got a radio.
What's that like? Does it have knobs and everything?
Yeah, knobs and buttons. Used to be on the Porsche, the radio had a short in it, so if I wanted to listen, I had to run over those little turtle things that are on the highway.
Oh, yeah.
In order to get it to kind of come back on again. I was like, isn't this how most people live?
That's so funny.
Swerving back and forth to keep the volume on.
You know, if you ever made enough money to avoid that, you'd really love life.
Really something. So I listened to it, and I thought, you know what? I should also mention in that spot, I was going to get a second with the house that we have, and then the folks at Kiel Mortgage said, this doesn't work out for you. The money's not – don't do that. You're not going to save anything by the time you refinance, and then you got to be in the house long enough. I was like, well, look at that. They're turning business away. 1-888-778-KIEL. Thanks, Kiel Mortgage. Okay. Millennials' urban lifestyle is about to get more expensive. Now, when they talk about millennials, we have to be careful because from now on, we should refer to them as
Well, that's the second article says they're really yuppies.
Yes. Okay.
The idea that millennials have money or are rich is a misnomer. In fact, most of them don't. Mm-hmm. Of course, they are in that age where most of us in their 20s didn't have a lot of money. But the idea that somehow millennials are the pampered set because they have money, says they've got more student debt. They've had a harder time, you know, dealing with the recession and all of that, that they are actually in worse shape. So it's not really fair to take an entire generation and clarify that. There is a subset mm-hmm. of millennials that are doing really well, and that's probably like all the tech bros.
Those tech guys,
everybody that lives down in South Lake Union. Now, they maybe can afford this lifestyle. But granted that, so let's just take the millennial lifestyle just means that the kind of lifestyle that's been made available in the last 15 years because of the gig economy. And we've got a good illustration from this guy. There's a long, in-depth article about in Atlantic about how the millennial lifestyle, however that is referred, is about to come crashing down. And he starts off saying, if you wake up on a Casper mattress, work out with a Peloton before breakfast, Uber to your desk at a WeWork, order DoorDash for lunch, take a Lyft home, and get dinner through Postmates, you've interacted with seven companies that will collectively lose nearly $14 billion this year alone. Mm. That basically everything that we are now doing that's new in the last a decade or so is coming at a cost because none of those companies are making money.
Yes.
And eventually, you know, things will come home to roost. And right now, that means that in order for Lyft and Uber and Postmates and all these other things to survive, they're either going to have to raise their rates significantly, you know, which will make them unavailable to a lot of people that right now are, or they're just going to have to go out of business.
Well, once you get addicted to something like having somebody bring food to your house, then you start to go, well, the convenience is worth it, right?
Yes.
I remember in the 1997 when all the dot-coms took off, and there was this called MyLackey.com, and you could go online. This is how crazy it was back then. Go online and ask them to get you whatever you want. They would bring, and it started out with CDs. You go to MyLackey.com, and they would bring you a CD.
Yearning for a Lyle Lovett.
Then you'd like, hey, could you bring me a hamburger? I remember that was like a big story.
Yeah.
We followed them at Evening Magazine, of guys that were working for My Lackey. You'd get a request, you'd jump in your car and go pick up and drive it over to the person.
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing new about that. I remember telling my dad, he goes, that hasn't changed at all. My mom would call Mr. McGuire down the street at the grocery store, and I would put it in my basket of my bicycle and deliver it. Nothing has changed. In this case, people like the convenience.
Yeah.
They like the ease of the ordering, and they will continue it. But you'll still get a good chunk of people that will spend the money to have stuff delivered.
One of his illustrations is he takes a meal kit company, and they say that basically what this is, you pay $100 a month, and most people sign on to that service. And after 4 months, they realize, oh, I kind of got a hang of this, how to cook stuff myself. And so they pour in $400 into the company, and then they walk away. And so then the company has to find somebody else to give them the $400. In the meantime, the way to sort of shake the trees and find more customers, they end up spending $500 in an effort to track down that one person who's only going to give them $400, and that's why it's a losing proposition. So then the big question is, will they survive or won't they? And you're right. They're banking on the fact that you're now going to get hooked on a service, but will you be able, if you're willing to pay $10 for a Lyft ride, a shared Lyft ride, will you be willing to pay $20? That's a big question. And whenever they go public, they say all these companies have gone public. They crash almost immediately because they're not self-sustaining. And that's
here's what I think could happen. You would see the Ubers and the Lyfts go away for a little while. And as that void is created, then you will see self-driving cars begin to pick up because that's really what Uber is waiting for. All their funding, everything, a lot of the research is going into that because their biggest cost and their biggest problem is that quote-unquote driver or
driver.
Employee, non-employee driver,
contracted
person driving a car. And once you get rid of them out of that seat, then all of a sudden, now we can operate however we want, and a car comes to your house, you get in it, it takes you where you need to go, it has all the additional costs or all the additional benefits of like, hey, I happen to notice, did you hear about this, that the car talks to you? Have you seen this?
No.
So it picks you up at your house and it says, hey, I picked you up 10 minutes early. I happened to notice that last night you were looking online for bathing suits. Did you know that Fred Meyer's having a sale on bathing suits?
And I can zip you there in 5 minutes.
We'll swing over. I'll call ahead and they'll deliver it out to the doorstep. So the car pulls up, stops. Somebody from Fred Meyer, probably a robot, Jacob would be glad to know that, brings the bathing suit to you. And you get it, and there you go, and then off it goes. And it's like, hey, look at this. It's 11:30. If you'd like, they're having a special over at Chubby's or whatever. You can get yourself a hamburger. And it would take you there, too.
And that's a great service, but it's equivalent to the checkout line where suddenly you end up buying things because it's right at the checkout line that you didn't intend to.
That's
where
you're weakest, Tom. Yeah. That's where you're weakest.
My Mother the Car, I think, isn't that an old sitcom that dealt with
that? Do you think that? How do you feel about that?
The service.
If that component is the future.
Yeah. The thing is, I have no problem with it. If that's the future, I think we can cope with it because you then need to learn self discipline.
Right. So, no thanks. Yeah, just take me straight there.
Yeah, like I'm not, you know, like people call up, they used to call up on the phone. People used to answer their phones and they'd say, hey, you know, we've got this nice encyclopedia about this or that. And you can say, no, thank you. And you just hang up because you realize you don't want it and/or it's a scam. You just adjust to, you know, to the pitch.
We had an encyclopedia salesman come to our house when we were on Warren Avenue in Queen Anne. And when the kids were little at the time, and my father's sitting there, my dad had been in sales with IBM, was a big sales trainer around the world. So the guy knocks at the door, just his luck. My father answers.
Yes.
And my dad goes, yeah, let's hear your pitch.
So the guy
comes in, sits down, gives him coffee. My father's sitting there, and I'm like listening, like, I have no interest in this.
Yeah.
I don't want encyclopedias and a new book every month, right? And my dad sits back and goes, that's not bad. I like the beginning. The middle you could tighten up, but I think we should buy these. And I go, whoa, whoa, whoa. And my father says, hey, it was a good sales pitch. You got to give him that. I go, I'm not buying them.
Wow.
And so the guy walked out selling them us. We bought the encyclopedias, yes.
But the idea is he didn't sell the encyclopedias.
He sold my father's.
Yeah, on his presentation.
Yes.
Like, I applaud you for that presentation.
Yeah.
I'll give you the $100. Yeah.
He could have been selling dead squirrels. You know what? I tell you, you can always use a dead squirrel for the kids. That's what he sold me on. The kids will appreciate this. They'll be able to cut pictures out of it like you used to. Like,
it's a book, Dad.
We carried those things around. We moved from one house to the other and it's like packing up the encyclopedias.
Well, the thing is, I think every middle class, and you weren't middle class, but every middle class family probably was one of their prized possessions was to have an encyclopedia set. I grew up with one, too.
Was yours the blue and red, or was yours the white and the maroon?
No, mine was red. It was like an American. It wasn't like the cool ones. It was I don't know, American something or other.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we had the whole set.
It had blue on it. That's right. Yeah. We had one of those, too. All right. Come back. The man that normally used to wear the big hat, I took it off, and apparently more blood got to his head, and he was able to see more clearly on what music and what's behind the words that might cause some problems for him. It's a short article.
It is a short article, but we have the entire video to play.
Oh, good. Okay, right back. How did Pharrell not know that the song was sort of suggestive to the point of being quote unquote rapey?
Because girls like it.
And why is this now making the news that now he has sort of come to the realization that the song that he sang with Robin Thicke, Blurred Lines. I know you want it.
Okay, so Blurred Lines, it was a huge, huge hit. It was one of the songs of the year, and yet there was a consistent chorus of criticism that I think it was the Daily Beast who said, it's kind of rapey, and it was attacked for that. And Pharrell, who has this, Pharrell does not have the same kind of image as Robin Thicke, who sang it with him. He didn't understand what all the concerns was about. He claims this is a years old song now. And when you watch the video, he says a lot of women like the song. It's kind of bouncy. It's kind of energetic. My video of the song that he did with Robin Thicke was directed by a woman. And he didn't see it as somehow a put down in any way or suggestive of abusing women, but in the light of like the hashtag Me Too movement and all that, he's gone back and reconsidered it, and now he finally is willing to concede. It never occurred to me that it could be seen this way, and now I acknowledge that it could indeed be seen this way. He says, I am not an abuser of women. I don't take advantage of women, but I understand now that when a guy says, I know you want it, that's the kind of thing that jerk guys could say or would say to women, and that's a line. And he says he was in effect adopting a rhetorical strategy that those jerk guys use.
He's playing
and he
that
was
part.
Using it innocently.
Mm-hmm.
And what's really interesting, because my memory of Blurred Lines is not from the video; it's from that infamous or famous VMA appearance with Miley Cyrus.
Yeah.
Where she is, it's a very different feel when Robin Thicke is like, you know, grinding his hips up against her backside as she's bent over and all that. That has a very different feel than when you watch Pharrell's video of it. It is a more light, buoyant kind of approach to it.
Uh-huh.
And the woman that directs the video, says, she said it was very intentional that all the women in that video that look straight at the camera, they're the ones in charge.
Yeah, they're denying that guy can say, oh, I know you want it. And she really doesn't.
That's right.
He doesn't even know.
Yes. Or that they do want it, and they're just being kind of kidded about it, but it's like they're the ones in charge, in effect. And that's how Pharrell saw it, and now, you know, he sees it differently. I don't know.
As far as the it, you know, falling into the Me Too sort of swirling. Mm-hmm.
Now, this preceded Me Too.
I got it.
Controversy.
But the idea that, you know, you could probably find in some Shakespeare monologue somewhere where something similar is said, but in iambic pentameter,
right.
That this has gone on for a long, long time. And the idea that women, there's some songs where women say the same sort of thing.
Yes.
So what has happened is the women have been taught or they have agreed to the fact that they will act just like men. Even though biologically it probably doesn't suit them, but in order to be able to protect themselves from being vulnerable, being hurt in this sort of new wham, bam, thank you, man, relationships that are occurring, where relationships can last anywhere between 1 and 4 in the morning, the idea is that online, through Twitter and other places, women are acting like men had always acted since man started walking erect. What? What? What did I get wrong?
Nothing. Your choice of vocabulary has been spot on this morning.
You play that back for me later on. Sometimes we're just... Got that, Andrew? I just want to see you take the bait on that.
Of course.
Why are you too smart for the old man right back?